Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn to Page Season 5, Book 1 of Dungeons & Dragons Endless Quest, Into the Jungle. Are you ready for the new season, Raps?
I'm certainly ready for the new season. I'm certainly ready for an Endless Quest. I'm ready to face dungeons and ready to face dragons, but I'm not ready to go into the jungle, actually. I'm all scared. My shoesies are not ready.
Yeah, you're going to step in a puddle and you're going to go, I want to go home.
I almost exclusively wear Chuck Taylors. I step in a puddle, I want to die instantly.
Yeah, well.
You're walking around with, like, this little trench foot container? Absolutely not.
You might as well be walking with, like, a Ziploc bag filled with water already.
Exactly! You know what? If I step in a puddle, it had better be a gelatinous ooze that immediately eats me. Like,
well,
and me.
Well, Dungeons & Dragons, I hear they have those gelatinous oozes. They also have clerics. This series, apparently in all of them, you will play as one of the classes in Dungeons & Dragons. We will see. They do, they double up, like, pretty fast on it, even though there's more classes. But in this one, we are
now,
the cleric.
There are a total of, as I understand it, 6 books in this season, this series. So those of you familiar with good old D&D, any edition pretty much, might recognize that you shouldn't require doubling up to get to 6, but
yeah,
it does. I mean, we're not necessarily going to see some of the more arcane classes like Ranger.
Yeah, truly an unhinged class such as Ranger. But yeah, no, they need the greedy, thieving little rogues. They needed to double up on rogue. I think they double up on cleric. They might double. It might be wizard, though. I don't know. I can't remember.
It's literally every, like, first time playing party of D&D. There's 2 rogues and no one knows why.
Yeah, but unlike D&D, if there's 2 clerics, like, that's unheard of. Like, why would I want to be that one? But then you play more D&D and you're like, dude, this class is busted.
Rito, I'm currently playing a D&D campaign where there are 2 clerics, but I'm actually lying. I'm not a cleric. I'm a rogue, and no one else in the party knows that. So this is a perfect example.
It's true.
And
I'm glad that's out
there. I'm currently the second cleric, quote-unquote second cleric, but I'm actually the second rogue in the party. So, look, I'm not beyond it.
Yeah, then there you go. We've cracked the case as to why they've doubled up. Maybe that's the thing. We're going to get to those books, and they're not actually saying they're that class, but... Another weird note, I guess worth mentioning, the formatting of how we're recording this season is different. We thought we could buy the digital copies, the PDFs, and we'd be on our merry way. No. It lied. The website lied. It's physical only. So I have a copy, and I'm streaming my copy through a very janky setup over Discord for us to read together. So forgive slight hiccups, but honestly, it might make it a more personal kind of experience anyways.
Yeah, legitimately, it kind of does feel a little like I'm reading over someone's shoulder.
Yeah, and you can see my hands and it's uncomfortable. Anywho, do you want to take us to the Halt Adventurer page?
Halt Adventurer, and read these words before you proceed.
You're about to embark on a journey. To where? Only you could possibly say. It is not a journey like any you've been on before, where you start at page 1 and continue on a straight course until you reach the end. Instead, you will be presented with many choices along your way. Each time you are faced with one such choice, make your decision in the options given, from the options given rather, and follow the directions to continue your adventure. Once your quest has come to an end, either favorably or, as I'm afraid, in some instances it is foretold to, gruesomely, return to the beginning of the last choice, or the last choice rather, and try again. This is not a journey for those who prefer to sit back and let others make the tricky... Sorry, Rita, we can't do this one.
Shoot.
It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
This is a journey for a leader, a true hero. One who is not afraid to converse with giants, explore the dark and dangerous jungle, or face the undead. If this doesn't sound like you, turn back now and forget you even came this way. But if this whiff of adventure has whet your appetite, then forward with you, my friend, and good luck.
To explain Raps's pause, I did close the book when it said if you're not ready for that. All right, okay. Ooh, okay.
I immediately predict that this is probably going to be the one that gives us the most difficulty with word pronunciation, because D&D loves to put in, like, just an unpronounceable name.
Like Gnome. Like, what are you talking about?
What am I?
Silent G?
Gnome? Yeah, right. Gnome?
Yeah. Look at that guy. He's not silent. No, sir. That's fake. All right. Here we go. After several stomach-churning weeks at sea aboard a sloop known as the Brazen Pegasus, you finally arrive at Port Nyanzaru. Okay. Meow. On the northern shore of the distant continent of Chult. I don't like that.
Yeah, Chult is hard. Chult's a tough one.
I'm not big on Chult. It's just
Chult. I immediately misread it as a character in a podcast I've been listening to a lot recently.
Yeah, yeah. One that's it's an even one step closer towards me not feeling like saying it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hello from the Magic Tavern. The voyage from Baldur's Gate. I know him.
I've heard of him.
Made for the longest week of your life, despite the assurances of Captain Ortome, a wily gnome with a shady past. Mm. You never know. Wait, you never got your sea legs and spent the entire time pitching back and forth across the ship's deck? Dwarves, in your opinion, were never meant to travel by sea, and you never had expected life as a cleric to ever put you upon the water. Is there not enough work to be done on the own ships after all? You spent most of the trip praying to Clangedon Silverbeard, the dwarf god of honorable battle to whom you've dedicated your life, hoping that he might be able to deliver you from your seasickness. Dear god of honorable battle, please help me get over my tummy pains. I am
please.
Fighting the most...
Otherwise, I cannot spill blood in your name.
I am fighting the most honorable battle in my tummy.
God truly gives his toughest wars to his bravest soldiers.
It's so true. You were built for the solid stone floors of your ancestral home, Mithril Hall, and wonder now how wise you were to leave it. The rest of the time you were spent cursing the Harpers, the semi-secret religious organization you work for, trying to do some good in this dangerous world. It was at their command that you set out for Chult. If not for them, you would never have set foot on a boat or found yourself so far from the comforts of home. But now you're here, you have a mission to find Artis Simber and the Ring of Winter. Simber is a legendary member of the Harpers, a man who never ages and has done a world of good. He's gone missing, though, along with his ring, a powerful artifact that if fell into the wrong hands, could be the thing that plunged the world into an eternal winter. You cannot let this happen. You stagger down the gangplank from the Brazen Pegasus and fall to your knees on the first patch of solid land you can find. You kiss it unashamedly and then offer up prayers of gratitude to Clangedon for delivering you there alive, if not in absolute comfort.
Hail and well met, good fellow.
A bushy-bearded man says as he helps you to your feet.
My name is Volothum Gadam, but you, of course, can call me Volo. All of my friends do. Do I know you?
Yeah, you're in that one game, in that one book, and that one other game.
I know you from your guide to everything.
Yeah, you're very prolific, the guide of everything. Do I know you, you ask, instantly suspicious?
Of course not.
He says with a wide and easy smile.
But I can recognize a fellow intrepid traveler at a giant's pace. I write guidebooks for a living, and my publisher, Tim Waterdeep Limited, sent me here on a tour to promote my latest tome, Volo's Guide to Monsters. Huh? Hopefully a good, sensible soul like yourself will never need a copy, though.
He gives you a dubious look.
I'm here on business.
You inform the man.
What I really need is someone to guide me. Good call!
Volo gives you his jolly slap on the back.
You're almost in the right place. You can find all sorts of them lying their trade here on the docks. But if you head just a little further into town, I can introduce you to a trusted pair I know. Kawasha is a local druid who works closely with the Vega pygmy known as Kulapak. Kupaluk.
About that, difficult to pronounce.
Third time's lucky.
You size the man up.
Sorry, I just met that one, actually, so I don't particularly know their name perfectly. I believe it's Koopaloop.
Ah, a lore reason why you don't know. Wow, This book has everything. You size the man up. He seems harmless enough, but is he trustworthy? He senses your hesitation and shrugs.
Feel free to hire someone else, of course, or leg it out there in the jungle on your own. Chult is an amazing land of adventure, and it awaits.
Ah, a choice. Find your own guides. Turn to page 6. Head to the jungle on your own. Turn to page 9. Hire Kuasha and Koopaloo. Turn to page 17. I do have to request. This is such a behind-the-scenes ask, but I normally, you know...
Yep.
But I am doing a book.
I can grab us some pages.
Yeah.
Okay. 3 leads to 6, 9, and 17. So, how do we feel about trusting Volothamp Gadam?
Not a fan of his hat or his vibes.
Yeah. My man has some rancid vibes. I do. This is a character archetype that I often love, but every single time I see or encounter Volo in a campaign, which happens often, or in a game, which happens often, I just get a good vibe from him.
He's going a bit too hard for me. But
exactly, he's trying to use his overwhelming charisma to cover something, and I don't know what it is, but it's like when someone like oversweetens like a meal or a drink in order to cover like a bad taste that's in there. Mm-hmm. It's like I taste the sweetness, but I know it's masking something.
Yeah, and also it's even stranger because this is mac and cheese. Like,
hang on,
you hit me. What do you got?
Y'all put marshmallow on top of potato in a thing, right?
Do we? How,
do you not? Is it not a thing to put marshmallow atop, like, sweet potato, like marshmallow and yams or something?
That sounds like a thing that would be at gatherings. I have never partaken in that sin, but...
I see.
Anyways, don't let that stop you from your point, frankly. Okay, vindicate it.
What, that actually sounds like it slaps to me. I've heard a lot of fun and hay made of that, but that inclusion of sweetness in an otherwise savory dish, love it.
It's true. Sweet potatoes are famous.
I've never tried
it. Not sweet. It's true. No, I've never had it. I don't want to. I don't like sweet potatoes. That's my problem. Like, if I like them, I'd probably try having them with marshmallows. I'm just not a sweet potato guy. I don't know.
Why? For what reason? They're so good. I think a sweet potato can be supplanted for a potato in almost every available situation. They're too sweet for you?
I think they can, but I do not think that they should. Here's the thing. I actually don't mind sweet potatoes. I do think this is my controversial take, I guess. It's more specific. It's that I hate sweet potato fries. Comparatively, I hate sweet potato fries compared to regular fries. In any situation where I'm going to get regular fries and they say sweet potato fries, I'm like, you've made a mistake. You shouldn't offer that here.
They can be done poorly.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not big on them. I don't mind sweet potato as an ingredient and other stuff. Anyway, we're pretty off course here, but so our sweet potatoes.
I will also circle back just for a second. to say, it's actually Koopaloo, as you'd said afterwards. I thought that was a C at the end. It is not. So Koopaloo is the veggie pygmy.
Okay.
Is that a vegetable pygmy? Is that what we're working with here?
I would assume so, right? Okay.
Because it's a local druid, so it's like, there's a little carrot that just follows her around. I kind of want to check him out just to know.
Yeah. That's 17.
Catch you on 17.
Well, don't act like you've got to flip no page. I'll see you there.
It's so difficult.
Hold on. Let me adjust my eyes. Okay. There we go. At your request, Volo takes you to the guides he mentioned and introduces you.
This is Kuasha,
he says.
The best guide in all of Chult. He and his stalwart companion, Koopaloo, can take the care of you from here.
With that, he turns and quickly disappears into the crowd, leaving you with your new guides. You regard them cautiously. Kuasha is a local man, tall and dark with an easy smile. Koopaloo is like nothing you've ever seen before. the size and shape of a halfling, but seemingly made of entirely green mold. He doesn't say a word, but he and Kuasha communicate using hand signals.
Happy to help any who come to our land, especially a cleric like yourself.
Kuasha says, recognizing the amulets around your neck as he offers you his hand in a greeting.
The undead have become a plague upon Chult, and anything you can do to help rid us of them will be appreciated.
You take his hand and give a firm but quick shake.
That's not my purpose here, but I'm always eager to help drive such horrors from the land.
You respond.
Excellent.
Kuasha says with a wide smile. Kupalue pounds the end of his spear into the ground in agreement, causing little puffs of spores to rise from his skin. Kuasha notices the uneasy glance that you give his friend and broadens his smile in what you assume is meant to be reassurance.
Don't worry,
he says.
The mold that animates veggie pygmies like my friendly weed here isn't contagious.
We do get a picture of him. He looks a little bit like, what if Oogie Boogie was in Oddworld?
And 100%! 100%! I was going to say, this man is a Mudokon. He is from Oddworld.
Yeah, but he's also green.
And a couple of them were.
Despite your unease, you hire the pair, and the three of you immediately set out for Fort Belorian, a short journey to the north.
It's run by these Flaming Fist mercenaries,
Kuasha explains.
They claim control over the territory you want to explore, and all adventurers need to purchase a charter from them to have permission to even wander around Chult. Or they throw you in chains. If it's not more convenient to kill you on the spot, that is.
Kupalue draws a thin finger across his throat. You gape at your guides.
That sounds like extortion.
Then your ears are unright,
Kuasha says.
Welcome to Chult. But I'm not here to loot tombs,
you say.
I'm just looking for one person.
Kuasha shrugs.
And we can try to explain that to the Flaming Fists. They find us. They might even listen for a bit before they attack.
Resigned to the unfairness of the situation, you follow Kuasha's guidance and make your way to Fort Belorian. There you find Commander Liara Portier, who agrees to sell you a charter at a hefty price. Almost every bit of money you have left, you swallow your indignation and pay the fee.
This is just an advance for us,
Liara tells you.
It pays for the first half of all the treasure you haul out of the jungle.
You almost choke at the way she's trying to rob you and decide to tell her there's no way she can have a half of the only treasure you care about, the Ring of Winter. The next day, well-rested and with charter in hand, you take off into the jungle and look for Artist Climber. Simber. Hold on. That's a different guy. He's just at the gym. He's just at the local rock climbing gym.
Artist Simba does 100% read as like a translation of Smash Brothers Ice Climber.
It's actually, that's the German translation of the character. Artist Simba. Kuasha lays out your options for you.
There are two ways to head out from here. We can either march towards Camp Righteous or towards Kaer Sabaal.
You give them a blank look and he explains your options further.
Oh, Camp Righteous is run by the Order of the Gauntlet, a group of Templars who see it as their holy mission to rid the world of the scourge of the undead. They're good people, if perhaps a bit arrogant. Their camp is off to the southwest, and there's no one who knows the western part of the island better than they do.
And Kaer Sabaal?
You ask?
Kaer Sabaal, to the southeast, is an ancient monastery run by a tribe of Arakokra, a bird kind of bird people with heads like eagles. Because they can fly, they can see all over. No one knows the eastern part of the island better than they do.
Kupalue stares straight at you with an eager, unblinking eye as Kuasha says to you,
It's your call, boss. Which way would you like to go?
You mull your options carefully, eager to complete your mission quickly and cleanly as possible, so you can get back home. Head for Camp Righteous. Turn to page 26. Head for Kaer Sabaal on page 28.
Camp Righteous sounds so much like a straight-to-Nickelodeon movie.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything that sounds more like one, and that includes Hannah Montana's World Tour.
It's true. I will say the only thing I would offer as maybe a more accurate thing is it is like a cheesy, like almost terrible budget Sunday school film parodying Camp Rock. And instead, it's about them singing songs about Jeezer at camp.
You know, kids, singing songs about
kissing.
Popular grunge song. Singing songs about blue suede shoes and about pumped up kicks. Now that's sacrilegious stuff. These songs are better when you sing them about God. All right, 1, 2, 3, 4.
I do want to go to camp.
Jesus! Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da! Jesus!
Yeah! Way to go, Zac Efron-like guy. Wait, was that? No, wait, Zac Efron wasn't. Who was the man in Camp
Rock? He was a High School Musical.
I know.
That's definitely like Nickelodeon.
It's definitely in that realm, the Disney Channel straight-to-TV kind of thing. But it was a Jonas brother. It was a Jonas brother, surely.
It's gonna be Nick.
Nick.
Joe.
Nick.
Bob.
Jonas. Wasn't Kevin. We know that. There's nothing. Not to insult Kevin, but we know it wasn't Kevin.
It might be the one of them that never goes in front of cameras and is not part of the band.
What,
it might
yeah.
be that one, but it's not Kevin.
Imagine being the fourth Jonas brother who was just too. He was too young at the time. And then it's like, oh, man. This whole
dude,
all my brothers are in a band and I'm just here and I'm playing with my Legos alone. I'm winning.
I have zero brothers and yet I still fully empathize with the fourth Jonas brother.
And the fact is that we just keep saying the fourth Jonas brother makes it all the more clear.
I'm part of the problem.
I know, but what are we going to do? My keyboard is behind my computer. I can't look up his name. And also, I do want to go to Camp Righteous.
Hell yeah. Let's meet there on page 26. The other page was page 28 or 29.
Let's see.
It would have been coming from 17 or the following from 17. 28.
Yep.
Thank you.
You set off on a long slog through the swampy part of the island that runs between River Sochenstar. Oh, man. Sochenstar. And the river, it does look like it just says Turkey.
It does. I don't think that's a bad.
It's
T-I-R-Y-K-I. It basically says Turkey.
Turkey. I think it's Tariki, possibly.
Yeah, that works.
At one point, three zombies crawl out of the muck and begin to follow you. You bravely turn to face them, raising your blessed warhammer as a symbol of your faith to Clangadin.
Back, you fell creatures!
You shout.
Return to the graves from which you belong!
The zombies cringe at your display, then turn tail and slowly flee back into the swampland, cringing. Kawasha and Kupalue. It's like when you're out and about and like there's like a group of teen boys and like they start laughing silently after they like looked in your general direction. You're like, no, this will ruin me.
No. My reputation with Gen Z.
They turn tail and slowly flee back into the swampland. The Gen Z. Kawasha and Kupalue cheer your victory and can't help but smile. You can't help but smile as you continue towards Camp Righteous. When you get there, though, your joy fades fast as Kupalue is the first to realize that something's wrong and then signals for you to be quiet. You creep forward and discover that the Templars are no longer in charge of Camp Righteous. In fact, the place is entirely empty.
What happened?
You whispered.
Well, you thought you said this place were safe.
Kupalue tugs at your sleeve and makes a number of signs that you can't understand. You turn to Kawasha for a translation.
He says he thought he saw a Templar uniform on one of those zombies you scared away. It was hard to tell much through all the mud on them.
The druid grimaces at this news.
I told the Templars they needed to build their defenses around this place. Maybe throw up a fence at least, but they just ignored me. Looks like they paid the price for that. I don't suppose it matters if the zombies got them or the goblins. They're all gone now.
Like, just like not the time, dude. You know? Yeah. You know, I told them.
It doesn't matter what killed them. They're all dead.
Yeah. I told them to build up their walls. Just, come on.
I didn't even realize the told you so that's going on in this.
Like,
I can't tell it to their corpses, so you'll have to listen. I could have prevented this easily.
I would have done it differently.
If it were me.
Your guides start creeping forward into the camp, not wanting to be left alone in a zombie-infested jungle. You follow close behind. The camp looks more like a shrine to a long-forgotten god. There's all sorts of tents and pens and such. The kind you'd find in any military camp, but they stand empty in front of a large statue, statue set into the face of a nearby cliff. It's 80 feet tall and resembles a man carrying a crocodile on his back. I want that.
Is that?
You ask, mystified.
The House of the Crocodile,
Kawasha says.
It's a shrine to a deal, that people made with crocodiles in ancient times that causes them to be enemies to this day. You can get into it through the archway beneath that man's feet, but anyone who's ever tried has paid the ultimate price.
Who makes a deal to become enemies?
Yeah, exactly.
Make a different deal. It's a shrine to...
We've started to be diplomatic with one another so we can work towards a mutual goal of war.
Which is kind of bored. Alright.
One generation just don't know how good they have it. It's time for another war.
You peer at it curiously. Were you here to plunder tombs and shrines? You might give the House of the Crocodile a try. What page? No, it's not an option. But you suspect that artist Simber would not have entered such a place. As you wander through the rest of the camp, Kupalue stamps his spear on the ground and signals for a halt.
What is it?
Kawasha asks. The Veggie Pygmy points towards the edge of the forest, and you instantly see what he's spotted. A half dozen or so goblins staring at you from the shadows. You begin stalking towards the creatures, unwilling to wait for them to stab you in the back. As you do, a pair of them stand up and blast away on horns, the peals of which echo throughout the jungle. A moment later, you hear the rattling of bones and the sound of dead groans emerging from the jungle to your left. Zombies and skeletons! Fight them on page 35, or run on page 40. The zombies and skeletons, I presume.
Yes.
Or run, presumably, I guess, to the goblins? I mean, not like...
I imagine we might be running away from the entire situation.
I guess so.
I do like the implication here that the goblins... You know, Kawasha was wondering whether or not the goblins or the zombies took them out, or rather saying that it doesn't matter which, but sure. It seems like it's both. The goblins use the zombies in the area by summoning them with horns. That's cool as hell.
Yeah, I do. That is good flavor. I will say, why do they never show goblin zombies and goblin skeletons? They're always dude size, you know? This is a world with many
skeletons
races.
Skeletons are always... full, like, very anthropomorphic. They are just the human.
They are the size and shape of Mario. Every time. Not really, but like, you know. Default boring.
Regular. They're the size and shape of Mario after he has eaten a mushroom. Yeah. Whereas we want skeletons that are the size and shape of Mario before he has eaten a mushroom.
Yeah.
Or after he has eaten a mushroom and got hit by a blooper.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we want to... I almost feel like I... You know, new series, new writer, new everything. I kind of want to make, like, a bold decision. Like, I want to fight him. I want to do something dumb and see how this book deals with that.
And here's my thought on that matter. We have already fought skeletons and it went very well. Also, we are a cleric who has turn undead, which is not, as I thought for many years, an ability that turns you into an undead.
It so sounds like it should be.
I know. Isn't that messed? When I was younger, I was like, why would I want to be a cleric? And then I was like, oh my God. Turn undead? That's sick.
Mm-hmm.
But it just means turn them around. Like, you literally, it's as cool as going up to every skeleton and rotating them 360 degrees and they walk away from the Xbox.
That is pretty cool, though. Like, unfortunately, you've described something that sounds cool as hell. It's like you're, like, a very suave dancer walking over, holding their hand above them, spinning them 360. Like,
yeah. Did you ever have times in... I feel like, in my head, it happened the most to me in, like, World of Warcraft general chat. The Xbox 300, turn them 360 degrees and walk around.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just, that's such a classic one. That was my first time where I understood what trolling was, ever.
Uh-huh. I always got the variation after that of do a full 180 and then moonwalk away.
I do want to see someone do a 180 and then moonwalk away. Like... I do want to see, like, you're in a conversation, and then you're, like, just face-to-face with somebody, and then I just, the power...
Sadly, the one guy that could have helped us with that died in 2000-something.
I know. The powerful energy of leaving an argument and moonwalking into someone pulling them over is actually so cool, though. Like, the... I don't know. I do want to find
I'm so
him,
done with this conversation. I'm not even going to register your physical presence.
I mean, like, what's cooler than that? Oh.
Ice cold. All right.
Exactly. All right, 35 to fight.
Let's do it.
Back, thou beasts!
You cry. Clanganon's power flows through you as fire erupts from your hands. But it drives away, I don't know, like half of the undead creatures stalking towards you. It seems that he wishes you to dispatch the others in a more personal way. You wade towards the creatures, thinking you'll have Kuwasha and Kupalue at your side. I actually really like the thought that the gods in D&D only give you half power because they're like they're trying to produce like a TV show. Like, this will be better for ratings.
I
actually like that.
That's great, and now I actually want to take that and use that.
I know, that's like, actually like a fun idea. Like, this will be super good for ratings. All right. Kupalue, wait, you wade towards the creatures thinking that you'll have Kuwasha and Kupalue by your side. Kupalue brings his spear on the ground and you turn to see the Vegapygmy and Kuwasha backing away.
There are too many of them,
Kuwasha shouts.
If it were just the undead, we might have some hope, but...
The goblins hurl a half a dozen spears in your direction. A couple of them knock down a skeleton that was about to claw at you, but another spear pierces your leg. Your guides rush to try and help you as you fall to the ground in agony, but the zombies reach you before they do. You offer up one last prayer to Clanganon that at least your corpse won't swell their ranks. The end.
All right, I'm glad to know that making dumb decisions is punished.
Yeah, what page?
The previous page was 26, and we would be moving instead to 40 as our run away from these option.
While you hate the horrors of the undead, Clanganon values valor in his priests and not stupidity, hey. You might be able to take out the zombies and the skeletons, but if those goblins come at you at the same time, they'll slaughter you for sure.
Let's go,
you tell your guides.
Now!
Kupalue dashes to the northeast, and Kuwasha and you chase right behind him. The zombies moan with their jaws... No, the zombies moan with their undead hunger and the skeletons gnash their exposed jaws. The goblins howl after you in a furious protest as they watch the undead stagger after you and then follow in their wake. Kupalue seems to know the land as if he were grown from it. He leads you through the thick jungle underbrush, and for a moment you think that you're going to be able to simply run from all your problems. Then you come up against the river. You quickly search left and right, but there appears to be no bridge or other way to cross it in sight. Kuwasha curses.
I shut up, Vanador! There's nothing for it,
he says as he adjusts his pack.
We must swim.
You consider informing him that dwarves are rotten swimmers, but you give that up when the point of a goblin's spear thuds into a nearby tree. You dive into the fast-running waters of the Sochin Star... What would you do? On that bad boy.
Sochin Star.
Yeah, okay. It just feels not D&D for some reason to me, but I think that's what...
That's what makes it so D&D.
Yeah, it's so true. This is like homebrew. Sochin Star. And a paddle with all your might. Your pursuers reach the shore when you're only halfway across the river. The skeletons don't pause in coming after you, but the force of the river seems to be too much for their bones, and they quickly are washed downstream. The zombies stop at the water's edge and watch the scene unfolding before them. Aww. With their prey out of reach, they turn to the goblins, and you hear the little monsters squealing in fear as they race away. Oh, soon we will have some goblin zombies. You don't have time to enjoy the pleasant sounds of the goblin's defeat. Cleric, by the way? I guess we didn't get the alignment, huh? You're too busy not drowning. You manage to make it to the other side of the river and collapse there for a bit until a soaking wet and bloated Koopalue tugs you to your feet. Casting your eye above, it's getting dark. Casting your eye about for Kuwasha, you find him gasping further along the riverbank. You allow yourselves just a moment to gather your breath, and then you head deeper into the jungle. Days later, you come upon another camp on the riverbank. This one, though, features fortifications all of the way around it in the form of a wide ditch, lined with tall and sharpened stakes. The charred corpses of people and animals surround the place, and you, okay, and you see something, it's just so blunt. It's like, this does, you know what, this does feel a little bit like someone who's kind of like amateur, like in the middle of experience of being a dungeon master. It's like, the charred, like they spent all the time thinking they were charred. The charred corpses of people and animals are like around the place.
Yep.
They're like, there's like dead.
The effort, stuff the effort peaks at the start of that sentence.
Yeah. And you can see soldiers patrolling the walls and stationed in the watchtowers.
Look.
Kuwasha draws your attention to a few of the men atop the wall.
Templars from the Order of the Gauntlet. The survivors must have relocated after here when Camp Righteous was overrun.
A thin but powerful looking man with the markings of a commander waves you into the camp's front gate and meets you once you're inside.
I'm Niles Breakbone,
he says.
Welcome to Camp Vengeance.
You explain that you're looking for artist Simber.
Simber?
Hardly. Breakbone exclaims.
My soldier saw him wandering around Mala just recently.
You want to cheer for having finally found some sign of the man, but Breakbone's scowl cuts you off.
What we really need, though, is someone to take care of my sickests. Nope, wrong voice. What we really need, though, is someone to take care of my sickest soldiers. Can you help me with that?
That would be righteous.
That would be vengeance.
Unfortunately, you're not advanced enough in your studies with Clangadin to cure such ailments, and you inform Breakbone of that. His frown deepens.
I must insist that you return your soldiers to Port Nyanzaru for treatment. When we provide you with information on where your man Simber can be found, it's really a matter of life and death.
Agree to help, 25. Refuse, 49. I mean, we are cleric. It feels rude to not.
We are, but his brow furrows. Then I insist you return your soldiers to Port Nyanzaru for treatment.
May I raise another concern?
Yes.
His name is Breakbone.
Yeah, that doesn't seem good.
You return your soldiers to Port Nyanzaru for treatment before we can provide you with any information on where your man Simba can be.
Your soldiers? Who's your soldiers? I'm very confused. I assume it has to be, like, just a misprint. I insist you return our soldiers to Port Nyanzaru. I'm happy to help. I am a cleric.
Yeah. I mean, I think we go to... let's go to 25. We'll help out this very confusing man.
The other page was...
Wow, I opened right.
Thank you.
Well, you hate to delay your search for artist Simber. You can't turn away from so many soldiers in such dire need. You agree to transport them back upriver on the conditions that Breakbone helps you find Simber upon your return. He gives you a weak smile of relief and emotion that you think he might not have felt for weeks. I hear you. I hear you, Breakbone. You and your guides load up a boat with 6 soldiers and set out for Port Nyanzaru, yep?
How come we didn't just use a boat to go upriver?
You ask Kuwasha. He shrugs.
Boats are expensive, and they are much easier to ride downriver than to paddle upriver.
Plus, the waters have a habit of hiding the kinds of dangers that you don't find on dry land.
You're not much good in a boat, but you set to helping the ill soldiers the best you can. They seem grateful for all that you do. That evening, as the sun sets, you hear a loud noise that vibrates the entire boat. If it wasn't so deep that you feel it in your chest, you'd think it would be a frog. Koopaloo ape. If this sound wasn't so loud, you'd think it came from something small. Yeah. Koopaloo ape points at something in the water that looks like a cluster of three eyes. Turn to page 55.
Frog moth!
Kawasha shouts.
Frogemoth! Flee!
You look about, unsure what your guide means for you to do. You're on the boat with nowhere to run to. Then he and Koopaloo ape dive straight into the murky waters of the Soshin Star. The six soldiers cry out for help, and you stay with them and begin uttering prayers to Clangadin. When the creature attached to those eyes leaps out of the water, though, you realize that no amount of prayer will save you from your fate. It is the size of an elephant, and it moves on a giant pair of frog-like haunches. It has a pair of tentacles in place of each arm, and it whips them at the boat while still in the air, ensuring that you can't escape. It whips the tentacles at the boat when it's still in the air? Like jumping like a... Oh my god, that's actually terrifying.
Good lord.
It arcs down at you out of the sky, and the last thing you see is its gullet coming straight for you. The end. We got Froghemoth.
That is rad as hell. I've never thought of just a very large, like, frog behemoth. I've seen very large frogs, right? That's not extremely uncommon, but like a very large frog beast.
Yeah, with tentacle hands and three eyes instead of two. I mean,
Closest thing I've seen are certain aliens in the Ratchet and Clank series. That is as close as I've ever gotten.
The closest I've seen is a picture of a frog, but I was really close to it.
How loud did it sound?
It was really quiet. It was a piece of paper. I printed out a picture of a frog. And I
just looked at it real close.
But Retromation does when he's not recording. I printed a photo of a frog and I held it really close to my face.
You should all try it. It's worth it. It's worth the time.
It's the simple
49
things. Yeah.
Will be the other page that we tell. Which is refusing to help, because if we do, we'll die.
You inform the commander that you have more pressing matters to which you must attend. You know, a good message to teach. You can't let Artis Simber get further away.
Fine.
Breakbone says.
We'll have the three of you staked out.
I don't know why this guy's voice cannot stay.
We'll have the three of you staked out in front of the walls to serve as zombie bait. Guards!
Fortunately for you, Kawasha and Koopaloo already have their weapons out.
Take him.
What the hell? Kawasha orders the Vegapygmy. Quick as lightning, Koopaloo corners the commander and puts the sharp end of his spear against the man's belly. Breakbone freezes and orders his soldiers to back up.
Now,
Kawasha says firmly,
you're going to let us go on our way, or my little friend is going to spill your last meal onto the ground.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ. To your relief, moments later, you find yourself... the comedy movie cut.
Cut to?
Yeah. You're going to let us go on our merry way, or my little friend's going to spill your last meal onto the ground. And the next cut, and it's the three of them walking out, like, very slowly together. Wow, I can't believe it was that easy. You know, like, that's just absolutely a movie shot. To your relief, moments later, you find yourself outside Camp Vengeance's gates, sprinting away at top speed.
Don't stop until we hit the trees,
Kawasha shouts over his shoulder. Arrows zip past your head, and you can hear feet tramping behind you. You don't look back. You make it to the trees, but even there, under the cool shade, you're not yet safe. You can hear Commander Breakbone still screaming from the wall around Camp Vengeance.
Stop those traitors! They'll bring zombies back to kill us all in the night! We can't afford to let them survive! Just keep running!
Kawasha shouts.
Don't stop!
He seems to be handling the run well, but you're almost out of breath. You put everything you have into strength. What's up?
Dwarves are not good at long distances.
Yeah. You put everything you have into your escape, though, remembering you don't need to run forever, just longer than the soldiers on your tail. At one point, you emerge into a clearing, and you can see a ruin looming high on a plateau. You don't know what might live there, but it probably can't be as hostile as the people from Camp Vengeance. You motion towards it, and Kawasha sees it and smiles.
That's Simbala, the place where they say they saw your friend Simba.
Hope leaps into your heart. You're so close to finding the man that you've come all this way for, you just need to escape your pursuers. A spear flies past your shoulder, and you give thanks to Clangadin for the fact that it missed you. He must have a nasty sense of humor, though, because the next spear the Templars of Camp Vengeance throw catches you right along your shoulder. It burns like a fire.
If it's okay, like, if the first one goes past and you go, thank God, like, and the second one hits you, I think it's only fair that you now curse God in return.
Mm-hmm. It burns like, wait, yeah. The next spear of the Templars of Camp Vengeance catches you right along your shoulder, and it burns like fire and leaves you bleeding. But you count yourself lucky that the spear didn't... Don't do it again, man. You count yourself lucky that the spear didn't score a solid hit. The third spear... otherwise, you'd be lying on the ground, maybe already dead. As it is, you'd still have a fighting chance. Kawasha slows down enough to grab you by the elbow.
We might be able to lose them in the marsh,
he suggests. Head for Imbala on 69 or drive into the marsh on 71.
Might be able to lose them in the marsh. I mean,
I do worry if we go into the marsh, we'll just be defeated by a marsh monster of some kind.
Yeah, and it, you know?
Could be sick, could be fun.
But also the last time we did a side quest, it didn't go well.
Very true. Very true. And also, one of these pages has the number. 71. Hell yeah.
Oh, shoot. I went to the wrong one. Oh, man. It's like... Never mind. 71. Never mind. You don't like the smell of that swamp. You shake your head at Kawasha.
Dwarves don't swim well. We prefer the mountains for a reason. Mbalaitis,
Kawasha says.
There's only one thing we need to do to make that happen. What's that? Run faster!
Despite the horrible wound in your shoulder, you dig down to find reserves of energy that you didn't know you had. You reach the edge of the plateau you saw before, and without another word, you start to climb. This, at least, is something you know how to do. As much as it hurts, you're a dwarf, and the cliff you're climbing is made of rock! Wait, well, I mean, I guess. You can find the faults in it, the paths on which you can crawl. This makes so much more sense. Sense to you than the overgrowth of the jungle you left behind. There's like a rope or like there's like a ladder, and a dwarf goes, I can't do this wood stuff. Let me just scale a...
I understand the rocks better than I understand this.
Let me just scale the 90-degree rock wall, because I understand...
How'd you grow a tree like that? Trees don't grow like that.
Also, what's a tree?
Now... This wood, you say, this wood, is it igneous, is it sedimentary, or is it metamorphic? It's important for my studies.
This is at least something you know how to do, as much as it hurts your dwarf, the cliff climbing is made of rock. This makes so much more sense to you than the overgrowth of the jungle you left behind. As you grit your teeth and climb higher, you hear the clatter of a spear hitting the wall below you. Okay. You're already out of reach of the tired soldiers chasing you. One of them leaps up to climb after you, but you start kicking loose rocks. Ah, we know those. Down on him from above, and he quickly gives up on that idea. Kubalue finds a path that cuts across the cliff face, and you collapse upon it. After a while, you recover enough strength to start walking once more until you reach the top of the plateau. The path is littered with human skulls. Oh, no dwarf ones, that's fine. But you push past them. Too close to give up now. There may have been a city up here once, but now there isn't. Now there's only an old ruin and a single hut still standing. As you approach the hut, an old woman emerges and introduces herself.
I am Nanny Popo.
Your wound finally overwhelms you and you collapse in front of her.
My God, you're dying,
she tells you softly.
But I can bring you back from the dead to a half-life at least. All I need from you is the soul of another.
Ask if there's another way, turn to page 82, or refuse to trade another's life for yours on page 86.
Guido, how much like metagame information we would... So yours first.
Mine is just more of like a... like a meta game in the sense of we say, she goes, you're going to have to kill somebody. And we're going to go, there has to be another way. Now that you mention it, yeah, there's a really easy way. Makes her such an evil person.
Oh, I actually, you do just seem parched. Here, have some water.
Have a cliff bar. Cliff, I know that. That's rock. Okay.
Oh, yeah, have some salt water. Put some rocks in that water.
Some rock water and some rock candy and the cliff bar. All right. Yeah, what's up? What's your metagame knowledge?
As long as I'm listening to Rock Lobster, I'll be able to hear. I think that this... I've had many various adventures through fantasy lands, but also many specific adventures through D&D. And what I have never encountered is an old woman who lives alone in a hut in the woods who is not evil.
Yeah.
It's 100% hit rate that these are hags of the swamp variety.
Yeah, but her name is Nanny Poo Poo.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. You're right. That's fair enough.
Yeah, I don't... I
do trust her more because of that, actually.
I mean, the ironic thing is both of these are kind of the same thing in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Is there another way? Or no, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
I kind of want to, like, risk offending her to, like, have her reveal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trading another life for my own. I'm a cleric.
Yeah, on to 86 it is.
Was going to 86 our progress. Never!
You tell the old woman...
What is my life worth if it comes at the cost of another innocence, much less that of a friend?
You realize then that you become friends with Kawash and Kupalue. Yes, we've really struck right to the core of those two.
Kupalue and I actually share some knowing glances and yeah. Nods occasionally, really builds our friendship, and nighttimes we play Yuka.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the fan cam cut of that relationship. Over the many days of your journey, what you got?
I have nothing except for the fact that when FanCam started, I thought it was wild as hell, and it's still going.
I can't believe it's real.
It's such an insane micro trend in media. It's wild.
It's so. Where's our FanCam? Oh, is it because exactly. The podcast?
Turn the page, fan cam. It's because there's no visual element for it. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, how dare you?
If you haven't seen any of these, go do yourself a favor. Look for something like Tom Holland fan cam and just see a bunch of static images of Tom Holland being panned and zoomed across while there's some sparkles in the foreground. It's wild.
Well, yeah, and you like the thing is you'll see them on like a completely unrelated message because they're just trying to get they're trying to get their video, that specific video, to have more views. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It's like they want that one to have a higher number because like this was done like on Twitter and stuff like before there was any possibility to monetize that at all. It was literally just I want my Tom Holland, I want my Dean from Supernatural slideshow to have a really big number by it. It was basically all it was.
It feels like the modern generation's AMVs.
Yeah, yeah.
We had anime music videos. They have fan cams.
Yeah, it's true. I do. Give me a shipping fan cam of Tom Holland and Dean from Supernatural with Simple and Clean in the background.
I have 100 of those downloaded. You can at any time.
my Tuesday afternoon staring closely at a printed out picture of a frog wraps this afternoon. Fan cam with Simple and Clean in background. Where were we? Never you tell the old
you realize
woman?
You become friends.
Oh yeah, that's right. Baloney. You realize you become friends with Kawash and Kupalue over the many days of your journey here to the spot where it seems you will die. You feel your what? You feel your shoulder where the spear got you, and you realize that you've been bleeding badly from your wound this entire time. The realization makes you shiver. Or is that the chill that's entered your body that as your hot blood has left it?
Leave the man alone, you hag!
Kawasha cries.
You think we don't know that pile of skulls at the entrance to this place is your handiwork? We should cut you down where you stand!
I mean, yeah, I guess in the discussion of the obvious hag element.
Yeah.
I guess maybe we should mention the skulls too, but hey.
Exactly. I mentioned all the meta elements and none of the direct in-canon elements yeah. that they told us, like the fact that whoever lives here killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. Did you know that Poo Poo Backwards is actually Evil Hag?
Live on evil?
Kupalue snorts an agreement and brandishes his spear at the old woman. He stands between you and her, ready to protect you with his life for some reason. Nanny Poo Poo cackles at your guides.
If you think you can take me, you're welcome to try.
You reach out and grab Kawash's arm. He looks down at you so sadly, and you know without a doubt that you're dying.
Just promise me one thing.
You tell him?
Don't let that woman have my body when I'm gone.
He shakes his head.
We will burn your body and turn into wisps of smoke on the wind. Thank you.
You say that you begin your final prayers to Clangdon. Your god's name is the last thing that passes from your lips, and you know that he will meet you in the afterlife. The end. Good ending.
Good ending. Yeah, exactly. We died, and we had friends.
Yeah. So
we died a warrior's death. Hell yeah.
I guess. Sort of. We died. We were like, ah, that spear's not gonna... Oh! And then we climbed the mountain and died. I don't know. Guess it's a warrior's death. What page?
Perhaps. So 71 is the one that we came from, and I didn't actually note down the other one. I've got 71 leads to 86. I think it was just before 86, or it might have been like 84 or something. 82 is what we're looking for. Ask if there's another way.
You don't want to hurt anyone, especially not the faithful guides who have brought you so far. Beautiful, faithful guides. There has to be another way. Nanny Poo Poo calls your guides to your side.
Kawasha?
She says...
Could you fetch me a coconut from inside one of the palm trees on the edge of the plateau? The water inside it might do your friend some good.
I literally said
oh my god, we're
water.
Just parched. Kawasha gazes down at you with pity. He knows the coconut water won't save you, but he's not prepared to refuse to help someone who's dying. He gives you a nod and then goes off to find you a coconut. Kupalue makes to go with him, but Nanny Poo Poo calls him back. The Veggie Pygmy comes to your side, and you reach for his hand. He gives it to you, and you hold it tight. You begin to cough then, and you wonder if you might never stop. Then, when you finally do, you're exhausted. You know the end is coming soon. You look to Nanny Poo Poo.
This can't be the only way.
She shrugs.
Yeah, you either want the half-life I can grant you, or you don't.
You offer up a prayer to Clangadin, and an answer is unclear. You cannot betray a friend. Before you can tell Nanny Poo Poo to stay her hand, though, you begin to cough again, harder than ever. You don't stop. Not until you're... Wait. You don't stop, not until you're dead. As you close your eyes, you think...
At least I stay true to myself. At least my friends will live.
You open your eyes one last time, your breath already gone, and you see Nanny Poo Poo coming at Kupalue with a knife. You try and shout out with a warning, but you can't speak. It's too late. Go to page 89.
For real?
For real? Oh? You awaken a short time later, and everything seems so cold. Takes you a while to realize that the weather's exactly the same. It's your flesh that lost all its heat. You pinch yourself, and you feel no pain. You feel nothing bad at all, but nothing good either. You gaze up at Nanny Poo Poo and Kawasha. She smiles at you proudly, happy to have brought you back to this hollow half-life. Kawasha glowers at you with murder in his eyes, eager to have revenge on you for the death of his friend. What the hell? You open your mouth to speak, but realize you have no air in your lungs. You stand up and draw in a purposeful breath.
I didn't want this! I tried to stop her!
So you say.
We were literally dead.
Yeah?
Kawasha gives...
We died!
We died about it. Kawasha gives Nanny Poo Poo a sidelong glare that she pointedly ignores.
All I know is that a traitor like you is worth far less than a Veggie Pygmy who had such a bright soul.
Kawasha's words hurt. Oh no. Fan cam. But you sense that the man is not willing to take the argument to a powerful Nanny Poo Poo who is the real culprit here, and you cannot blame him considering her obvious power. Ask Nanny Poo Poo to bring Koopaloo Back to Life on 94, Ask About Artist Simber, or Threaten Nanny Poo Poo on 108.
You know what? She's had the upper hand this entire time. Let's threaten her.
Okay, you got these written down? No reason.
94, 98, 108.
Not that I expect us to die or anything here. As you turn to leave, you look down at your hands. The ones that maybe could have saved Koopaloo from Nanny Poo Poo, and you begin to shudder. After a moment, you realize that you're trying to cry, but your undead body can no longer generate tears. You can't even grieve properly, whether it's for Koopaloo or yourself. You turn on Nanny Poo Poo with your full fury and stab a finger at her.
You should have let me die!
You tell her.
Instead, you killed an innocent creature, all so you could transform me into this horrific thing!
The woman smiles at you.
Deep down, you wanted me to, my devilish dwarf. I simply made you the offer. When you didn't refuse it, you abandoned your good sense and your god's grace.
You gape at her, stunned by her vile words.
How dare you, you foul beast!
Nanny Poo Poo begins to speak in a voice that sounds awfully like yours.
Save me, Nanny Poo Poo, please! I'll do anything! Anything! Just don't let me die!
As the look of horror grows on your face, she breaks into a vicious cackle that would curdle your blood if it were still pumping through your veins. You heft your hammer in your hand.
Take care, woman!
You growl threateningly, taking a step towards her.
Or what? You'll show me your ingratitude?
She sneers at you.
If it wasn't for me, you'd be feeding the beetles in the back of my hut right now!
You glance at Kawasha, but he just folds his arms in front of his chest as he watches the two of you bicker over your deal gone bad. You'll get no help from him when you look back at Nanny Poo Poo, her features shift to that of a hideous green-skinned hag. No way. Nanny Poo Poo's bad?
Turn to page 103.
103. You take a swing at Nanny Poo Poo, but she pivots out of the way of your attack despite her apparent age. She's nimble as a dancer.
You ungrateful wench!
The green hag snarls at you.
You think you can take me on? I had the power to bind your departing soul to your unwelcoming flesh. I can unbind it just as easily.
By Glangan and Shield!
You curse.
Does your evil know no end?
Nanny Poo Poo smirks at you.
If you want to remain in my favor, then you must do me a service.
I'm done with your deals, hag!
You shout. She cackles once more.
You still have one friend left in this world. Kill him, and I'll let you go on your way. Fail me, and I'll return you to your rightful death.
Kawasha gasps at you as he reaches for his sword. Try and escape, 116, or attack the hag on 110.
Attack that hag!
Yay! 116 or 110, 110. You heft your hammer before you and head towards Kawasha as if you're going to attack him. He gazes at you in horror as you approach him, but then at the last moment you spin around and swing at Nanny Poo Poo instead. You can almost hear his sigh of relief. The hag screeches in dismay as she realizes that you've turned against her.
You'll regret this,
she says.
But not for long.
Your first attack misses Nanny Poo Poo by a hair. But you swing at her again. This time, your hammer catches the hag on her shoulder and you hear a satisfying crack. She cries out in pain and clutches her broken arm.
You're already dead,
she says to you.
I just need to cut the strings tying you to this world.
Kawasha leaps forward and then stabs at the hag. Distracted by her fury at you, she doesn't see him coming until it's far too late. His blade slides between her ribs and then comes out with a sickening sound. If she were human, the blow would have killed her for sure, but to your dismay, she's still standing. Unfortunately for you, she has time to undo the spell she cast, and you feel the energy that moved your limbs leech away. You collapse to the ground, hammer thudding at your feet. Kawasha doesn't come to your aid. Instead, he presses his attack against the green hag, and within seconds, he cuts her down as she crumples into a pile next to you on the ground. With Nanny Poo Poo no more, Kawasha turns his sword to you, unsure whether you still present a threat. When he sees that you're never going to rise again, he sheathes his blade and kneels to you, grimacing at the ruin you've made at yourself. Turn to page 119. What the hell, dude?
I almost wonder if, like, Clangadin's going to revive us.
I hope so.
Like, you did a holy act. Welcome back, buddy.
Using your last breath and knowing that you'll never be able to draw another, okay. You offer up a final prayer to Clangadin to beg Kawasha for his forgiveness.
I know now that I do not deserve it, but I hope that you can find it in your heart.
Kawasha watches as the final spark of life escapes from you, and he reaches down to close your eyes. In your final moments, you hear his voice as he speaks to you.
You cost me a good friend, but you saved my life in the end. I may not be able to forgive you, but I hope that you've redeemed yourself, at least in the eyes of your distant god.
You hear him stand to leave.
For my part, I promised to tell the tale of a dwarf priest who came to Chult to find someone, but who found out exactly what he was made of instead.
Then all is darkness and you hear no more. The end. I mean, that feels like a full metal fitting end, but I do wonder if not attacking is better.
Exactly. I have too intense curiosity about how good this can go. Like, it would be hilarious if none of these paths end in the Ring of Winter.
Well, it could be, like, the thing where there's only one right way. It could mm-hmm. be, it doesn't mention that anywhere.
But you'll be looking for 116 as our alternative approach here. This is running away, I believe, instead of fighting the nanny.
You put yourself between Kawasha and Nanny Poo Poo and shout at the man.
Run!
He gapes at you for a moment before he decides to take you up on your suggestion and seize the opportunity to escape with his life. You know that Nanny Poo Poo will not let Kawasha go that easily. In order to distract her from his run for freedom, you charge towards her. She raises her hands to greet you, her fingers curling with the gestures needed for some terrible spell, and instead of attacking her, you haul up short and pray that her spell has not had time to take shape.
I don't want to hurt you,
you cry, breaking through her mumbled spell casting. She cackles at you.
I'd like to see you try.
But to your relief, she has stopped her spell and is eyeing you curiously.
I didn't want you to hurt Koopaloo either.
I don't want to hurt you. I'd like to see you try. Wait, what? I'd like to see you try not to hurt me. Wait, what happened?
Runs
yeah?
into my great hammer, cracks her skull.
You fail!
I didn't want you to hurt Koopaloo either.
You continue, sure that you have her attention.
So you say.
And now, I'm gonna prove it!
Slowly, you set your sacred warhammer down on the ground before her and somewhere behind her. Behind you, you hear Kawasha stumble over the skulls on the path downwards, and smile at the thought that at least he's gotten away. Nanny Poo Poo stares at you, eyeing up the amulet that hangs around your neck.
What sort of trick is this? A cleric giving up his sacred weapon?
No trick at all. I don't want this shadow life you've given me. It's tainted with the death of an innocent.
You can't just give it back!
She laughs. Though she still watches you intently as you step over your discarded weapon towards her.
Why not?
You ask.
Surely it is within your power to undo what you've done.
You step closer to her and she shudders at your question.
Why would I want to?
Because I cheated you.
She looks confused for a moment, so you continue.
I didn't kill Koopaloo. You killed him yourself. I didn't hold up my end of the bargain, and it's only fair you should take back yours.
She marvels at you as though you are like nothing she's ever seen.
You really want to die?
I'm already dead,
you point out.
I just want you to let me rest.
She rubs her chin and sizes you up. You offer a silent prayer to Clangadin, and she answers it.
Fair enough,
she says.
The deal's off.
You fall over dead, but smiling. The end.
Get in! Get in! Okay, so we're back in the realm of 89 is our decision portal. 94 and 98 are our two available decisions at this point. This would be prior to fighting the hag, or threatening the hag, rather. I believe it's the option to run away or something else.
What page is the decision on? This
89 is the decision.
Ask Nanny Poo Poo to bring Koopaloo back to life. Ask about Artist Simber. I mean,
or threat option again. Which we took. What do you think?
Really likes us just following the critical path.
It does, but I really did like that entire diversion. That was fun.
I did. I thought that was like an actually interesting bit of, like a really interesting bit of story. I was like, huh. Should we try 98 and try critical path for a second, just see if it's still doing that? I feel bad not asking to bring Koopaloo back to life, though.
I do too. I almost wonder if going to 98 will convince like Kawasha that we're bad.
I mean, yeah. Let's at least try and bring Koopaloo back to life. You didn't mean for Koopaloo to die and wish that you could do something, anything to change that. You'd swap your life for the Vegapygmies if you could, but you know it does not work like that, doesn't it? Didn't it literally, though? Didn't,
yeah.
Isn't that like literally how it works?
You can only trade. You can only trade bonus actions. Sorry, you can only trade standard actions down into bonus actions.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah,
can't
yeah,
do
yeah,
those.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right. All right. Maybe you should ask.
Nanny Poo Poo.
You implore.
How could you do this? Please, I beg of you, bring Koopaloo back to life.
I might be able to do that.
She says, as she thoughtfully strokes her chin.
But I need another soul for it. And I only see one other that's free at the moment.
She gives Kawasha a meaningful look.
No!
You shout as Kawasha backs away, putting his hand on the hilt of his sword. He's worried that you're going to attack him too. Wait, what? We didn't attack... Okay. You can hardly blame him.
If you so much as lay a hand on me, I will not be responsible for my actions.
He snarls with barely constrained fury.
Isn't it bad enough that you murdered my best friend?
You're not sure which of you he's addressing, but as he glances darkly at Nanny Poo Poo, you realize that if he wasn't so wary of her, the man would have already put his blade through your chest. You wonder, in that the state you're in, if that would actually do you any harm. Either way, Kawasha is obviously spoiling for a fight, and this is not the place for it. If a battle between the two of you breaks out here, Nanny Poo Poo might kill you both on the spot. Instead, you decide you want to put as much distance between you and Nanny Poo Poo as possible. You gesture towards the door, and your guide leads the way out, not taking his eyes from either of you for a moment. You leave with Nanny Poo Poo's cackle echoing in your ears, and you hike back down towards the jungle, and you try and reason with Kawasha.
I realize you're angry with me,
you say.
Can we at least have a truce about this until we reach the ground?
Kawasha grudgingly agrees.
If I didn't finish you in front of Nanny Poo Poo the moment I realized she'd killed Koopaloo for you, I suppose I can wait until we're on solid ground before I shove my blade through your belly.
You wish that there was something you could say to make him understand. Perhaps I was dead at the time. And you walk for a long while in silence, trying to find the words, like, I was dead at the time. As you near the ground, sensing that the time for all of this has come to a head is near, you try again to reason with him.
I did not want this.
You start.
I were dead at the time. I would have stopped it where I could. You could have accepted your death like a true warrior.
Kawasha snarls.
Isn't that what your dwarf god would have you do?
That stings more than you could care to admit, and you feel yourself getting angry at the stubborn refusal to listen to you.
That's not fair. You don't know him.
You say.
I've a mission to complete. Once that's over, I can leave this world on my own terms with, other than having failed because my guide steered me into the path of a guard's thrown spear. You cannot blame that injury on us.
Honestly, it's a better blame than the reverse, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kawasha speaks in such a dark tone that you wonder if he's going to attack you right then and there, despite your agreement to wait until you reach the jungle.
Perhaps if you had been a better warrior, your god wouldn't have let you get hurt.
You realize that there's no way for you two to settle your differences that does not involve a fight. But after what happened to Koopaloo, do you really want to win it? You should have said no to Nanny Poo Poo immediately. Instead, well, we did, but then, well, okay. Instead, your hesitation cost Koopaloo's life, and you'll have to live with the guilt for the rest of your half-life. Not really, because we do know the... You should be dead already. Is it right to defend a life already lost? Confront Kawasha on 100 or continue down the cliff on 105.
If we had gone to this page without checking out the other one, I would have thought that the other is it's got to be the critical path, right? Where we just don't even entertain the question. But no, we know that immediately terminates. Confront Kawasha? Is that physically confront Kawasha? Or is it like, you know, continue the conversation of like why you don't deserve to be blamed for this? Mm-hmm. I feel like continuing down the cliff is a much more neutral option, whereas I feel like confront Kawasha could be, all right, swing a hammer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm down with it. 105 is, that's what I'd like to try it. As you draw nearer to the ground, you realize that once you get there, Kawasha is going to try and kill you. No way. Under other circumstances, you might have let him, but right now there's too much at stake. You must find Simber and secure the ring before it falls into the wrong hands. Kupalue understood the mission. If Kuasha kills you now, doesn't that mean Kupalue died in vain? Oh, but you're not sure your guide will see it that way. It happens sooner than you'd expected, though. When you reach a particularly narrow part of the path, Kuasha breaks his word to wait until you reach the jungle and charges forward to shove you off a cliff. As you tumble out into thin air, you flail about in terror, your hammer catching on something, and the next thing you know, you've accidentally pulled Kuasha along with you. Kuasha screams at you in terror and rage as the two of you fall dozens of feet into the thick jungle canopy below. Branches tear at you and snap under you, but do so little as to slow your fall. You land.
Yeah!
Hard.
Woo!
Turn to page bingo. Check it off. Kuasha's dead as soon as he hits the ground. Because you're undead, you don't feel any pain from having landed so badly, but your legs no longer work. You manage to pull yourself along by your arms and stop at your guide's side.
I'm sorry, my friend.
You offer to his still form.
I will do what I can to make this right. I promise.
You fancy a small smile that makes its way to Kawash's lips before you close his eyes and pull yourself painlessly across the forest floor.
He's dead as soon as he hits the ground. Then he gives you a cheeky old grin.
He died instantly the next day.
Kawasha, hello!
I'm here.
There's no chance for you to find Artist Simber like this, and instead you decide to climb back up the nanny poo-poo to see if there's something she can do. Oh my god. It takes
you... I don't want to go back in that jungle. That's full of wood. I understand this cliff, though. I'm going back up.
It takes you 3 days to manage it, pulling yourself up the path one arm's length at a time. When you finally haul yourself over a pile of skulls at the entry to Mbala, you find her waiting there for you, cackling at your fate.
How is the afterlife treating you?
She says with open glee. You wish you could take her down, but as you know, such an act is beyond you now.
Borley,
you say?
I were wondering if you might do me the courtesy of letting me move on.
She gives you a disappointed cluck of her tongue.
Now, where would be the fun in that?
You level a devastating glare at her, and you're not going to let her toy with you for another minute.
If you don't, I will set myself up on the path to warn away any head of deer so they won't become ensnared in one of your foul traps.
She scowls at you.
You wouldn't dare.
But something in your undead face must convince her. Your cold, dead stare. She sighs in disappointment and sticks her bottom lip at you in a pout.
No. All right.
She says.
I hope you enjoy meeting your precious god.
You offer up a prayer for that very thing, and she waves her hand at you and releases you from her spell. The end, you die. Loves to kill us.
Loves to kill us? So if any encounter with... I will say we have exactly one unexplored branch until we get all the way back to what mission we go on. So I have to assume that if there is a critical branch for this mission, it lay on 98, which would be fleeing immediately instead of even asking if she can bring Kupalue back.
Once again, you ask Nanny Poopoo to kill you.
Oh, sorry, not fleeing again. Apologies, this is asking her for details about Artist Simba.
Yeah, this is straight out
but
just
yes,
like...
yes, all of these are just asking her to kill us.
This is very much just, yes, that guy died. Well, anyway.
Yeah.
We're looking for a man named Artist Simba.
You tell Nanny Poo Poo, but your quest seems irrelevant now that you're at least half dead, but you realize it's all you have left.
We heard he was here.
She gives you a sympathetic nod.
He visited me earlier in the week. I believe he was headed for Oralunga.
You look to Kuasha. He frowns at you.
I know of this place,
he says.
It's an ancient city that was consumed by the jungle long ago.
It lies to the west of here.
Is he just not worried about in this timeline? He's not mad in this timeline?
I guess.
All right. Nanny Poopoo says it lies west of here.
That's what I told this friend of yours. I can't say if he followed my directions.
Thank you for your...
You hear? You tell her. although you're not sure that you mean it. You lead Kawasha to the exit, considering your next steps. He glares at you the entire way.
Look.
You finally say to him.
I understand that you're angry about this, and you have every right to be.
Nah.
But we're stuck out here in the middle of the jungle for right now. Can we put our differences aside for a moment?
Differences? My best friend is dead, and the blame lies at your feet.
Eh. You give him a solemn nod.
We can argue about this now, and maybe kill each other. And no matter who wins, my mission will be a failure and the Ring of Winter will be lost. Perhaps to the detriment of the entire world. Or, if you can hold your temper just a while longer, we can recover the ring and then hash this out.
Kawasha glowers at you until you wonder if he's going to attack you right then and there. You spread your hands wide.
I don't think Kupalua needs to have died in vain.
That hits the guide hard.
I will do this with you,
he says.
For the memory of my friend, and then I will kill you for all that you've done.
Fair enough,
you say, as agreeably as you can manage.
I don't think I could ask for more. For Kupalua.
Kawasha starts down the narrow path from Mbala.
For Kupalua.
Turn to page 102. Kawasha leads you to the jungle, into the jungle to the west. After hacking your way through the undergrowth for a couple of days, you come upon a tall man with tawny skin, brown hair, and green eyes. His traveling companion is a surreal, lizard-like person with a wrinkly gray hide. The man wears a ring rhymed with frost, and you recognize it as the Ring of Winter.
Or December,
you say. Okay. And the man gives you an uncertain nod.
And this is my friend Dragonbait.
You show him your silver pin in the shape of a harp, which marks you as a member of the Harpers.
Ah,
he says.
This is about the ring, isn't it? The High Harpers want to make sure it's safe.
You confirm this with a nod, and the man takes off the ring and holds it in front of you.
All right,
he says.
I'll give it to you, if you can guarantee it'll keep out of evil hands.
He still seems suspicious of you, and you realize whether or not he actually gives you the ring rests entirely on how you respond to his offer. Take it on 118 or refuse it on 121. Well, it's supposed to stay out of evil hands, so if we say no, then obviously he's going to say, oh, well, then he must be evil hands.
What? I almost wonder if it's one of those situations.
It's the reverse.
There's two different things here, right?
Yeah.
We are technically undead. It is theoretically possible that there is some enchantment on this that would not be good in our hands. Like, literally, we should not hold this. Alternatively, there's the, like, oh, yeah, please give me the nuclear codes. I promise I won't use them.
Yeah.
Like the only person who's fit to hold them is the person who don't want them.
That's where I'm at. I mean, I feel like the right answer is 121. We'll see what that is.
Let's do it. Let's refuse it.
No, I don't want that. Don't give it to me.
That stank. In quotes. Sorry, Raps, would you say... Oh, wait, actually, there is.
Boy.
You look down at your hands as you realize for a moment that you realize you can't keep that kind of promise. What right do you have to take the ring now?
Look at me.
You say.
Like, we're so desperate to complete this quest for the Harpers, to do some good in this world, that I allowed myself to become something evil. You can't give me that ring. The moment you do, it'll fall into evil hands.
There's a horrible stench of brimstone, and you realize it's coming from the Soriel.
Dragonbait!
Artis says as he tries to wave the smell away.
His people communicate through strong scents. He makes this one when he's confused.
Just to clarify, brimstone, for people unfamiliar... smells very similar to sulfur. For people unfamiliar with sulfur, it smells very similar to rotten eggs.
For people unfamiliar, rotten eggs smells a little bit like a fart.
Yeah, exactly. He's confused and ripped ass about it.
It's like if you're got closed captioning on in a show and it just says confused fart in brackets.
I, One of my favorite examples of an adjective in closed captioning is over a comedy special I was watching, where it would alternate between laughs, audience laughs, and light laughter.
Yeah, that's rude, but yeah, okay. He confused toots. Kawasha puts a sympathetic hand on your shoulder.
Refusing the ring is the right thing to do. You continue to surprise me, dwarf, and this time in a good way.
Well, if you're sure, I'll trust your judgment.
Artis says, slipping the ring back onto his finger.
You need to keep that safe,
you tell Artis.
Others are hunting for it, and if they find you, they'll take it from you. We can't risk it going to the wrong people. They'll try. Do me a favor, though.
Artis says to you.
Get a message back to the High Harpers for me and let them know that I'm alive and well, and that the Ring of Winter remains safe with me.
You shake hands with the man you travel across an ocean to find, and whom you died and killed for a while trying to reach. You shake hands with the man you travel across an ocean to find, and whom you died and killed for while trying to reach. Yes.
I don't think I'll get a ship to take me home.
You tell him.
But I'll send a letter on the fastest ship I can locate. Then that will have to do.
With nothing left to discuss, Artis and Dragonbait take their leave of you and disappear back into the jungle. This whole book was for us to go and tell the guy with the ring who's trying to keep it safe to keep the ring safe.
Keep it safe. Keep it secret.
I know. You already told me that.
Oh, okay. Time to die.
When you finally reach Port Nianzarum, once more, you write the letter to the Harpers that Artis requested. You also tell them that you're dead.
I regret to inform you I have died.
Oh my god. That line goes so hard. You also tell him that you're dead and won't be coming back. I have traveled to a farm upstate.
Calling in dead to work.
Oh my god. I'm on your aunt and uncle's farm and I'm very happy. You hand the letter to Kawasha and ask him to deliver it.
And what will happen to you?
He asks.
No ship will take me home, but that's not going to stop me from trying to get there.
You walk straight into the sea, which swallows you whole as you leave Chult behind for good. The end.
Rita?
Yeah?
This season is going to slap. This is so good.
I can't believe that. I regret to inform you, I'm dead.
The whole quest could have been accomplished by a flying pigeon.
They have letters in this universe. They just take this letter with you. Travel across the world and say that thing you're keeping safe. Keep it safe. By the way, I'm dead. Walks into the ocean.
It's rad as hell.
That's so
I love
good.
That, like... This clearly, people can't see this, or other people couldn't have seen this. This was the final page of the book. Like,
yeah.
This is very clearly the canon ending for this route. And it's that we became Half-Life, we killed one of our companions, and then we walked into the sea after failing our quest. Isn't that great? It's so cool!
I love it. Like, I love that that is... probably the canon ending. It's so freaking good. I enjoyed the hell out of that.
It's so good. I'm really looking forward to this entire season. We have 6 of these books, so 5 of them still left ahead of us to enjoy.
Oh, man.
And enjoy them thoroughly, we shall.
Indeed. I'm trying to think of a non-creepy way to segue using the word enjoy. I enjoy the support of the wonderful Patreon supporter of the episode. I can't do it without sounding like a creep. Who is the wonderful producer for this episode from Patreon?
I've got to hand my thanks to you, Astral Fox, for supporting our Patreon over at Turn to Page Cast on Patreon. It's patreon.com/turntopagecast. At or above the hardcover tiers where the executive producers come in, the people who really get the grease on the wheels, get their show moving. Astral Fox, thank you for your help. Of course, thanks to the help for anyone who's supporting over on that channel at all. Very much helps us do things such as get the art for the new season from Sam Caton, which you need to look at. It's good. So good!
I really, really like it. I do regret
if you're on a podcast...
inform you that I'm dead. Never mind.
Reno's dead at the moment, so yeah. He won't be coming back.
I regret to inform you that I'm dead and I will not be coming back. Sorry, continue. Sam is great.
Yes, the art for the new season is really, really good and is based on some of the covers from this season, and our characters are really cool in it. It's very good. If you're listening on a podcast app and you have not, like, if like it just auto-plays the next episode or something like that, you need to look at the screen for a moment. Like, it's a bad boy of a piece of art.
It's a bad boy. It's a bad boy. In quotations.
The baddest.
You know, confused fart. All right. I really enjoyed Endless Quest. So Endless Quest has existed for a long time. These are like the newest ones in the kind of like, it's the newest offshoot of it. But yeah, I've really enjoyed that thoroughly.
That does, this is the longest shot of all time, but this is the new season. That is to say that there are 6 books that are currently available to us from the Endless Quest D&D series, the modern Matt Forbeck season of it.
Yeah.
The older series, not all of the episodes of Endless Quest were about Dungeons & Dragons, but unfortunately, we can't find the entirety of the set of Endless Quest books, nor can we even find the entire set of the Dungeons & Dragons Endless Quest books from the 1980s. If anyone happens to have a bead on that information and would generously share that information with us, that would be more than appreciated. Yeah. Though I recognize it's a very, very narrow chance because we searched high and wide and it was not promising.
It's a tall ask, but yeah, we found a good handful of them, but yeah, I think if we were to do it, we'd probably like the ambitious thing would be just finding the Dungeons and Dragons ones, because again, there were some that were outside of the D&D realm, like for a couple episodes of it. But yeah, very, very tall order. But hey, if you have any leads on that, turntopagecast@gmail.com, because if they're anything like this, they are probably great, and they probably have like that extra older school kind of charm to them as well. But anyway, yeah, again, big thank you, Astro Fox, supporting on patreon.com/turntopagecast, at or above the $5 tier. I regret to inform you that you are dead and you will not be coming back.
Sorry. Walk in the sea. Find the nearest, if it's the Pacific or the Atlantic.
Get yourself picked up with some tongs. Get out to sea. But yeah, that's that.
If I ever get picked up by tongs, I am definitely going to confusedly fart.
100%. Yeah. I'm so lost in the best way. Confused fart. There we go. It's just got so many it's got so many uses. But if you want to help support the podcast in a free way, you can do so over youtube.com/turntopagecast. Likes, comments, subscribing, all that stuff. Oop, I bumped my camera, but what do you care? There's no book anymore. There's the YouTube page. If you want to help support over there, that'd be wonderful. If we hit 1,000 subscribers, we can actually monetize that channel. I thought the number was 500, and then YouTube changed it to 1,000. So if we hit 1,000 subscribers, we can monetize that. Currently, right now, the only funding is coming from the Patreon, and that has been very nice because this season, as we mentioned at the beginning, we bought the books. I purchased all of the books for this. Thankfully, we... have this weird jury rigged setup so that we only need to buy one. That we're trying to stretch out the Patreon money that way. Big, big thanks, big help. Anyone who wants to support over there, it's very above and beyond, but it is also very helpful in keeping this going. Okay, give me the art, give me the books, etc., etc. But again, likes, comments, reviews, all that stuff, also very helpful. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye bye.
Adios.